It is gone! A two-run home run for Reese Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Swing and a miss. He got him. And Aaron Nola leads two. Zadora on the run. Reaches up and makes the grab.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 434. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to talk Phillies prospects with Joe Bloss, who's a writer for MILB.com. He wrote a piece looking at the state of the Phillies farm system, so we're going to talk to him about what he found as he dug deep into the Phillies prospects, and he also spoke to Josh Bonifay, who's the director of the Phillies minor league system. So we're going to get Joe Bloss's comments on the Phillies system and what he found out talking to the Phillies. We're also going to take a look at the state of the Phillies front office search. Lots of different names floating around there. The 2021 Hall of Fame ballot has been released, and one National League East star has been suspended for the 2021 season because of performance-enhancing drugs. We'll tell you who and what it means coming up here in the next few minutes of the podcast. But first, let's dive into the current state of the Phillies front office and take a look at some of these front office contenders that have been floated about in recent weeks. I mean, I guess the first question we need to ask ourselves is, what has happened over the last couple of weeks since John Middleton and Eddie McPhail held their Zoom news conferences, where it seemed like the organization was content to play out the 2021 season with Andy McPhail, who had not been involved in day-to-day baseball operations decision-making for the last 5 years, and interim general manager Ned Rice, who is essentially, I don't know, I don't feel right calling him Matt Klintak's clone, but he has been Matt Klintak's right-hand man for these last 5 years, and so it's reasonable to assume we're not exactly talking about a grand departure from one person to the other. So the Phillies seemed more than willing to have that duo chart the path forward for the next year. Now, all of a sudden, it seems as though they are putting their front office recalibration into overdrive, and the question is why has this team done a 180 over the last couple of weeks? Well, there's probably a few different reasons. You've seen what the Angels and what the Mets have done in reconfiguring their front office, or probably what the Angels and the Marlins have done reconfiguring their front office. You look at the Mets are moving full steam ahead. I think Steve Cohen's news conference scared the bejeepers out of John Middleton and Andy McPhail. They realize that the rest of the baseball universe will continue to spin on their axes, and that the Phillies can't just stand still here this offseason if they want to end this 9-year postseason drought. And they've been getting hammered by the national media, by the local media, by podcasters like me. And, you know, listen, I'm just a local podcaster. I'm your friendly neighborhood podcaster who can't stand when a team is sitting idly by when they could be doing something. But I think all of the pressure coming from sports talk radio, coming from the fan base, coming from the local and national press tells you everything you need to know, that universally speaking, no one could figure out what the heck this front office was doing or thinking. And it's disconcerting to me that they had to be forced into making these decisions, that they had to be dragged kicking and screaming into moving forward, that their natural inclination was to just sit on their hands this offseason, but at least we've yanked their hands out from underneath their bottoms, and that they are finally moving forward with this process. Now, Jason Stark and Ken Rosenthal from The Athletic noted this week that when you look at the two open positions, and we're talking about general manager positions, but obviously the Phillies are looking for a president of baseball operations, so these two teams may not exactly be swimming in the same waters here for their current openings. But looking at these two franchises, the Phillies are a far less appealing destination. In the piece, they talked to one executive who has been interviewed for GM openings in recent years, and that person said, "The Mets' job is the jewel job right now. I don't think of the Phillies' job in the same way. One thing I think everyone understands is that in New York, you can depend on Sandy Alderson to let you do the job right. It's a big job, and it's a unique market. I look at Philadelphia as a great market, but it's not a great job right now." And in this piece, the exec reasoned that the Phillies are past the phase of their rebuild where they bottomed out and had five straight top 10 picks from 2014 to 18, yet they've gone 9 seasons since their last postseason appearance. And with really only Alec Bohm, the surefire star on the rise, this executive said, quote, "They have some good players, but I don't know that they're that far ahead of where they were when they started their rebuild." And That's what we have been saying on this podcast for the last couple of months. When you look at where this team started in 2015, you look at where they started when Matt Klentak came aboard in 2017, in 2016, you don't see much of a difference. You have some guys with higher salaries, and maybe this team is 10 wins better than they were in 2016. At least that's what the numbers have shown over these last few years. But really, where are they? How much further are they in the rebuild? Now, there's another part of me that wonders if this person's being too pessimistic. If the Phillies had a decent bullpen this year, they're a playoff team. They probably are a good 5 wins better than they were. And so maybe you go from being 4 games under 500 to 4 games over 500. Now, is that good enough when you've got a $200 million payroll? No, you're still probably more on the mediocre side than being one of the elite franchises in the National League. And when they started this rebuild, that's what the Phillies wanted to be. They wanted to be a perennial postseason contender year in and year out, and that just has not happened. So I think they are farther along right now because you do have good pieces, but they need to re-sign JT Realmuto. They need to figure out what to do at shortstop and in center field and in the starting rotation, and they've got to reconstruct a bullpen, and it doesn't sound like they're going to increase their payroll this year in order to make all those things happen. They are woefully behind in their player development and in the farm system. And we're going to get into that more in depth here in the next few minutes. The Phillies will paint a rosier picture about their farm system than the rest of Major League Baseball will. Baseball America is out with their top 10 Phillies prospects, which we'll also get into coming up here in the next few minutes. But organizationally, where they rank in baseball is going to be in the bottom third of Major League Baseball farm systems. And so this executive's point is well taken. This is not a crown jewel job. This is not like you're going to go take over the Marlins or take over the Padres or take over one of these young, exciting teams that seem to be gathering a lot of forward momentum. The Phillies have been stuck in neutral. They've been spinning their tires in quicksand, and I don't know that they looked all that eager to end that this offseason, and in 2021, they seemed perfectly willing to just continue spinning their tires, and that's what's distressing. Now, that all being said, they are moving forward to replace Andy McPhail as the president of baseball operations, which had to be done. They could not get Matt Klentak's replacement on board without first replacing the president of baseball ops. And it looks as though the Phillies recognize they can't wait a year to do that. So one of the big names, the biggest name that has been mentioned in connection with any baseball front office job is Theo Epstein. We talked about it on episode 433 of the podcast, Liz and I did. And at the time, Theo Epstein was tied to the Cubs. This week, he announced that he was resigning with 1 year left in his contract as the Cubs head of baseball operations, which means he's now a free agent. Jim Salisbury reports that the Phillies will check in with Theo, they probably already have, on his interest in taking over the team's baseball ops, but it doesn't sound like he's ready to dive into another team's mess. In his resignation letter, Epstein wrote, "Next summer will be my first in 30 years not clocking into work every day at a major league ballpark. I do plan on having a third chapter leading a baseball organization someday, though I do not expect it to be next year." Now, again, a lot of times money talks. And Theo Epstein is said to want an ownership stake in whatever team he joins next. This guy's a surefire Hall of Famer. All right, he's going to the Hall of Fame. He ended the Red Sox drought and then won a second World Series with them. He ended the Cubs drought. This guy obviously knows how to resurrect baseball teams and turn them into winners. So whatever he needs, he's going to get. All right, for his next baseball job, he can write his own check. Does he want to come work for the Phillies? If you were Theo Epstein, would you look at the Phillies job and would you feel a rush to come back for the 2021 season to take on this Phillies job? I don't know that I would. I mean, he can have his pick of any job he wants. Would this be the job that he would want? Not only that, Epstein made $10 million a season with Chicago. The Phillies would probably have to blow that deal out of the water in order to get him. So given Middleton's financial restraints, would they be willing to pay him $15 million a year, $20 million a year? It's a lot of money for Theo Epstein. And the Phillies can't afford to wait for Theo to be done with his gap year. They can't sit around and wait until next season. They just can't afford to do that. The fan base just won't have it. So I don't think Theo Epstein is a realistic solution here. I don't think he wants to be the head of baseball ops in 2021. Sounds like he wants to explore something grander, something a little bit bigger. Maybe the Phillies can offer him something like that. Maybe they can give him more of an ownership stake than we're led to believe. But Theo Epstein in the Phillies organization does not seem a real possibility here for 2021, but it sounds as though the Phillies are at least kicking the tires and gauging his interest. The guy that I'm probably most excited about after Theo Epstein is Michael Hill, who was the general manager of the Miami Marlins for the last few years. The more I sit and I think about Hill, the more I like this idea. Think about the Miami Marlins for a second. I know that they have been a lackluster organization, historically speaking, although they do have two world championships. Over the last few years, they until this past season, in a pandemic expanded playoff system, they hadn't made the playoffs in a long time. But this year they did cruise past the Phillies and make it into the postseason. Think about what kind of a Marlins team we could have been looking at over these last few years if Hill had not been forced to trade Giancarlo Stanton, Christian Yelich, JT Realmuto, and Marcell Ozuna. Hill helped to draft and develop all of those guys. If they'd had all those guys the last few years, the Marlins could have been one of the National League's powerhouse teams over the last 5 years. I mean, we could have been looking at a team that year in and year out was a World Series contender, but he was not allowed to do that. He had to get rid of all of those guys, and other teams knew that he had to get rid of those guys, and he couldn't extract maximum value. I mean, the Giancarlo Stanton deal that really netted them nothing. But he did get decent returns from some of the other trades, specifically in the trade for JT Realmuto, landed him Sixto Sanchez, who appears to be a top of the rotation mainstay for them for years to come. Hill has shown an ability to draft and develop talent. That is something this organization sorely needs. He was let go by the Marlins this offseason, and I think he deserves a chance to take the baseball ops job. He's probably my favorite candidate outside of Theo Epstein. And, you know, we talk about wanting to have more African Americans involved in baseball. We want to grow the game in the inner cities, and it would be great for another person of color to remain in the top spot of a baseball team's ops department. I think that would do wonders for the growth of the game in the inner city among African American youths in this country. To have Michael Hill continue to be running a baseball team, he's competent. He seems, and everything you hear about the guy, I mean, a lot of the reporting that Jim Salisbury did on him, just everybody glows when they talk about him. He might be my favorite candidate, even with Theo Epstein. He might be my favorite candidate, but as of right now, he would be the guy that I would be targeting. He's a free agent. He's not currently employed by the Marlins and not employed by anybody else. Apparently, the Angels interviewed him for their GM job. I would seriously consider making him the president of baseball operations based on what he did with the Marlins. Another name you're going to hear mentioned is Eric Neander, the GM of the Rays. Doesn't sound like Tampa wants to let him go. And it doesn't exactly sound like he wants to leave Tampa. The Rays would not let him interview for the Angels general manager job because it was a lateral move. But if it's for a promotion to president of baseball ops, I don't think the Rays can refuse. But it doesn't sound like Neander is looking to move on at the moment. If he is, Neander would be an outstanding choice based on how they've made the Rays a 90-plus win team these last three seasons and got them to the World Series this last year on a shoestring budget. Give Eric Neander some cash, some money to work with, and I think you could be looking at another Andrew Friedman, no doubt about it. Brian Sabian is a name you're going to hear mentioned quite a bit, the guy who constructed the San Francisco Giants' 2010, 2012, and 2014 World Series championship teams. He's not going to be like Matt Klentak, where they're slaves to the numbers. He's not a data-driven guy, but he does use data, but mixes it with the old school scouting guys. And this sounds like the kind of guy that John Middleton has in mind that he's talking about, a guy with a track record of success, won three World Series, has a proven track record, and mixes the old school with the new school, has the ability, kind of like a Joe Girardi, as a general manager or president of baseball operations. I think he would show more balance between the older methods and the new school analytics. Wouldn't hate Brian Sabian coming to the Phillies as the president of baseball ops. Another name you're going to hear mentioned quite a bit, Dave Dombrowski. Now, Dave Dombrowski is not going to grow your farm system. That's not going to be his job. He is renowned for selling prospects to get pieces at the big league level. Now, when you're talking about being in the middle of Bryce Harper's prime, if you're going to go out and re-sign JT Realmuto and have him in his prime and Aaron Nola and Zach Wheeler and some of these other players in their primes, then that might be what this team needs right now. He had a lot of success with the Detroit Tigers, as we've mentioned. He won a World Series with the Boston Red Sox back in 2017. I think this is a move that would probably make Bryce Harper happy because you know that Dombrowski would be going all in on the 2021 and 2022 season. The only question is, Would John Middleton allow him to do what he feels he needs to do in order to put a winning baseball team on the field in 2021? If Middleton is looking to scale back and pare back payroll, is that something that would interest Dave Dombrowski? That's a question for sure. And as Stark and Rosenthal noted, a couple other names, former Cubs GM Jim Hendry, who's a special assistant with the Yankees, was recommended by Andy McPhail. Those guys are buddies from their days together in Chicago. We talked about him on the last episode of the podcast. Former Diamondbacks and Padres GM Josh Burns, the Dodgers senior VP of baseball operations, could be a candidate. Although they're talking about more with the Mets than the Phillies, and then former Rockies general manager Dan O'Dowd, who is now with the MLB Network, could be another option there as well. So, and there's other names floating around too. Make sure to check out Jason and Ken's piece in The Athletic and Jim Salisbury's piece for NBC Sports Philadelphia. They also have some other names floating around out there that could be fit. Some of them are more in line with a general manager type job, and some would be more for a president of baseball operations position. I think there's some good candidates out there. The only question is Philadelphia an attractive enough option to get them here? And that's what we don't know. We don't know how some of these guys view the Phillies job. You would think having a roster with Aaron Nola and Zach Wheeler and Bryce Harper and a passionate fan base and an owner who in normal times was more than happy to walk right up to the luxury tax. And again, I can't explain to you why he doesn't want to go over the luxury tax. It really doesn't make any sense whatsoever. But at least this has traditionally been a team that wants to spend money on players. Again, doesn't sound like that's what they want to do here in 2021. But if they can get somebody on board to push John Middleton, maybe that changes here this offseason. But that's where things stand as of right now, and it sounds as though interviews are taking place, and maybe we'll get some traction on this over the next week or so by the time we speak next. So the Phillies front office search is moving forward here, and hopefully over the next few days we will get some resolution. Coming up next, I'm going to talk to Joe Bloss of MILB.com on the state of the Phillies farm system. We'll check in on the progress of the minor leaguers and what the future is for some of these guys. We'll do that coming up next here on Hitting Season. Well, we've been talking a lot about the direction of the big league club here with the Philadelphia Phillies over the last couple of weeks, obviously because of a very disappointing finish to the 2020 season and 9 straight years out of the playoffs, the second longest drought in Major League Baseball. But much of what we really need to be thinking about and talking about here over this offseason is how do the Phillies get better at developing their own players? And we want to get a state of the system here because we did not have a minor league system this year. We had a lot of folks over in Lehigh Valley doing some baseball things, but a lot of those things are on TV, but we didn't really get a sense as to how all the Phillies minor leaguers, especially the guys in the lower minors, were progressing this year. And so I think this is a good time to talk about the state of the farm system. And it just so happens that MILB.com is doing a state of the system for all 30 teams. And I'm joined by Joe Bloss, who wrote the Phillies state of the system for MILB.com. You can follow Joe on Twitter at JT Bloss. Joe, welcome to Hitting Season. How are you?
I'm good, John. Thanks for having me on. This is exciting.
Yeah, man, it should be fun. And I think most Phillies fans are a little down on the system. Most of the publications I've seen over the last year or two have the Phillies farm system falling rather precipitously. And of course, that would probably happen again this offseason with Alec Bohm being promoted to the major league team. So as you took a look at the Phillies system here, what would you say right now is the system's biggest strength? We'll start off on a positive note.
So I think it's going to be pitching, and I know it sounds so crazy because of what we all went through with the bullpen last year. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the top five, according to MLB Pipeline, that's what we work with at MILB.com. Obviously, Spencer Howard's still technically in the prospect rankings, even mm-hmm. though we all saw him in the majors last year.
Yeah,
they used their top draft pick on Mick Abel, who, though, you know, he'll be a few years away coming out of high school, is very exciting and really, you know, maybe the most pure talent they have in that system. Mm. And then it's rounded out with Francisco Morales and Adonis Medina. So I think there are a lot of names to like. And when I talked to Josh Bonifay for that piece, the Phillies farm director, the thing that I thought was really most interesting was – you know, his excitement. Now, granted, he is the farm director. He's going to talk mm-hmm. highly of his own players. That's a given. Mm-hmm. But his excitement about some of the guys that you don't see on these lists. You know, I think some of the names that he mentioned. Let me bring up my piece.
Sure.
were James MacArthur, who played at Clearwater last, Christopher Soriano, who's a young kid out of the Dominican who showed up to their instructional camp in Clearwater recently. Mm-hmm. And he said, even though, you know, he was just a 19-year-old kid, he really looked like he belonged, that he wasn't overmatched facing some older prospects. Mm-hmm. I think it's exciting to hear, you know, the club's enthusiasm about some of these guys that are a little lower on sort of some of these ranking lists. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, I think when we talk about the Phillies needing to get more out of their development, sometimes it is those diamonds in the rough that can really, yeah. you know, sort of change your outlook as an organization. And that's sort of my, that's my two cents there on the pitching.
Yeah. And I think one of the things we looked at last year and really saw no help coming from some of the younger pitchers, especially as the bullpen was cratering, it seemed like everybody they brought up really had a difficult time. I think Connor Brogdon at the end of the season gave Phillies fans at least one guy, I think, to maybe think can progress. But that's been the big question that Phillies fans have been asking themselves is, and I think the Phillies front office has been asking themselves since they let Matt Klentak go, is why haven't they been able to develop the quote unquote waves of pitching that they were talking about? And I guess, you know, we're trying to figure out, is it a drafting issue or is it a development issue? When you talked to Josh Bonifay, what were his thoughts on the state of the Phillies minor league pitching? I mean, you mentioned some of the guys he's excited about in the low minors, but did he have anything to say about the team's ability to develop these guys?
Well, he definitely, you know, I think as us as external, you know, evaluators, we've kind of noticed that maybe they've had some guys stall out at the upper levels, guys who were exciting, you know, at lower levels and sort of didn't perform once they got to maybe AAA or the major leagues. I think, mm-hmm. you know, an example of that is Eniel De Los Santos. Mm-hmm. He's somebody who's still kind of up at the top of the rankings. But we, you know, he hasn't really turned that corner as a major league contributor. His take was sort of that, you know, he was excited. I was asking him mostly about sort of what went down at the alternate camp and instructional league.
Yeah.
But when I asked him, you know, now that Alec Bohm is in the majors, Spencer Howard is almost there, you know, in terms of leaving these prospect lists, where does he sort of see the identity of the system or the strength? And this was after we had talked about a lot of these, you know, these pitchers that are maybe lower. And he really did feel that the pitching was a strength.
Okay.
In terms of what they've been doing wrong, it's hard to tell. You know, we both know that they've done a lot more forward thinking, a lot more analytic base development, and sort of overhauled what the organization looked like under Matt Klentak. Now he's gone. I think, you know, rumors are swirling right now. Theo Epstein is a free agent. We'll see what goes on. But it'll be interesting to maybe see if when they do hire a new, you know, director of baseball ops, does that person, you know, totally overhaul the way they think about pitching? We'll see. Mm-hmm.
Well, we talked about some of the strengths, and it is interesting that Bonifay thinks pitching is a strength. I guess we'll see next year whether or not that is true or not. But as you look at the prospect lists, even in the below the top 10, you get into the teens and the 20s, you still don't really see much in the ways of outfielders in the Philly system. I know Baseball America just came out with their top 10, and Mickey Moniak, understandably, is not on their top 10 anymore, the former number one overall pick in 2016. Talk a little bit about the lack of outfielding that they have in the minor league system right now, because it is kind of tough to see how they're able to develop any of those guys at the moment.
Right. When you look at it in the context of where their major league outfield stands, we all know Bryce Harper is going to be there forever. Mm-hmm. Center field, I know a lot of people do like what Roman Quinn brings to the field. It's just a matter of him staying on the field. And Andrew McCutchen, you would have to think this will probably be his last year with the Phillies. We'll see how things pan out. So there's room for people to kind of step up and assume one of those spots, I would think, on the left or center field long term. In their top 30 of prospect rankings on MLB Pipeline, the Phillies have only four outfielders. You would think there'd probably be more, but Mickey Moniak actually isn't even the top ranked guy. We have Simon Muziati at number 11, Moniak at 12, Johan Rojas at number 17, and Hylan Ortiz at number 19. And I think a lot of people know Mickey Moniak's story, of course. You know, number one pick, hasn't really panned out. Still young. I don't think they're ready to sort of write him off yet. Muziati is kind of a guy that sort of jumped up in terms of people's boards in recent years. He had a really solid year at Clearwater in 2019 and, was a Florida State League All-Star. Pretty quick, pretty speedy. His bat is probably his last tool compared to his speed and his fielding, but maybe somebody you could put in center field and put him lower down in the lineup and hopefully get something out of him. Ortiz is a slugger, a pure slugger who hasn't really been able to cut down the strikeouts yet.
Yeah.
And Rojas is a lot younger. I don't think he's made his full season debut yet. When you look at that group, you kind of hope that maybe one of them can sort of pan out. I think, you know, the organization obviously is high on those guys. And really the most curious question for me is, where are the ones that we didn't see in 2020? How did they develop? Did they make any progress with Ortiz? It's tough to say because we haven't seen this guy play a real game in so long. So I think moving forward, maybe one of the truest assessments of the system as a whole will be, or, you know, how the Phillies can develop is what do these guys look like when we get to see them next? You know, have any of them taken strides? Who knows? You know, your guess is as good as mine, but it's another reason to look forward to baseball, you know, finally being back, especially minor league baseball.
Yeah, hopefully they're able to get a minor league system season going here in 2021. I want to talk a little bit about Bryson Stott because I think most folks have him as the number two prospect behind Spencer Howard, and he was obviously came out of college, and I'm the Phillies drafted him out of college, and he's not a high school guy, so you would expect that Stott would be major league ready at some point in the next season or two. What are we looking at as far as upside from Stott, and is there a thought on when the Phillies believe he could be ready for the big leagues?
That is my greatest question, John. I try to look at it like this. So he wasn't, you know, the prolific bat that Alec Bohm was coming out of the draft, but, you know, let's try to look at it on a similar timeline. I know that's not completely fair, but if he was 1 year behind Alec Bohm, this past season, he would have hopefully risen up to, you know, maybe double A.
Yeah.
The year he got drafted, he only played at Williamsport. So he didn't even reach a full season affiliate. But he looked pretty good, at least for stretches. So it really would have been awesome to see, you know, how far he could have climbed in 2020 had there been, you know, real minor league games. But so I just asked Josh Bonifay, you know, straight up, well, how has he grown? How has Bryson Stott grown, you know, since we last saw him? And there were a few things that he really talked to. Part of it was the defense. You know, Stott is a bigger guy for a shortstop, not really the prototypical body that you would see at that position. And he was really impressed with Bryson Stott's feet and the way he's sort of been, you know, moving at shortstop. And then the other thing was kind of his plate selection and swinging. I'd have to bring up the stats to really know what his strikeout rate was in Williamsport that year. But I think that is definitely part of his game that they would like to see improve a little bit. And that, you know, when they got to see him recently, it was sort of plate selection and then using all fields, you know, when he was actually making contact. So I wish I had a more concrete answer as to where he's going to be, you know, when we get back on the field. But, you know, when we, you know, sort of look at where the Phillies are shortstop, at the big league level, I think most people are assuming that Didi's not coming back. It's not a guarantee, but
right.
There's definitely space for Bryson Stott if he's able to sort of ascend, you know, late 2021 or early 2022, it could be his spot to take at some point.
A lot of the rumors going around right now in Major League Baseball are about shortstop Francisco Lindor. And obviously there are many teams that would love to have Lindor. He's only sign for one season, so he'd be a free agent after the 2021 season. But one would imagine teams looking to trade for him might try to get him to sign an extension. Maybe not, who knows? But the Phillies, of course, like you said, may not have Didi Gregorius back. So there have been conversations about Lindor in Philadelphia. And as I have looked at this farm system and noting that it is ranked among the bottom third pretty much across the board, I wonder if they have the pieces to do something like go after Francisco Lindor. And one of the guys I think would lead a deal is Bryson Stott. I can't imagine the Phillies would trade Spencer Howard for, I mean, they already went down that road with Sixto Sanchez and JT Realmuto. I don't think that would happen. But do you think this Phillies team has enough in the minor league system to put together a realistic package for Francisco Lindor? Not that I'm advocating for it, but just curious if they have the horses to do something like that if they wanted to.
I want to say yes. You look, like you said, If you put Bryson Stott in there, there's somewhat of a short of the future that you're getting Cleveland. And then if you're not including Spencer Howard, which I really wouldn't do if I were the Phillies, because you need to round out that rotation with homegrown guys at some point, right?
Yeah.
So I guess if you went with maybe a Francisco Morales, you're really their next, you know, highest ranked pitcher. You could throw Mick Abel in there. It really would depend, you know, what the Indians are looking for, what sort of timeline they're looking for. We know that the Mets in recent years were willing to part with recent draft picks. Mm-hmm. And then I guess some other pitchers that the Phillies are fond of. Eric Miller is a guy that they took in the fourth round out of Stanford a couple of years ago. And Josh Bonifay was really excited about him. Mm. I think when Miller pitched in 2019, the year he got picked, he had a 1.5 ERA. And then looked great at Instructs, according to Josh Bonifay. So I guess if you wanted to pile some of their good pitchers with Bryson Stott, mm-hmm. Maybe then you're kind of depleting an already depleted system. Yeah. So I think we both would agree that we wouldn't bet on this happening.
Right.
And you also have to think that, you know, other organizations probably have more to offer.
Yeah. Not unless Dave Dombrowski comes on board as the president of baseball ops. He'll get rid of all of them.
but we'll see. I wouldn't bet on it happening, but it sure would be that would be kind of fun. I wouldn't be totally against it.
Yeah, it depends on who it is, but I agree with you. I think it's been, this team's had such little success developing guys. If you can get Lindor in here, and I think you'd have to try and sign him to an extension this time around and not roll the dice like you did with Realmuto.
I don't think we want to play that game again.
No, sir.
Right now, yeah. No.
Well, speaking of Realmuto, I think, you know, I still think personally there's a real good chance the Phillies will end up signing him. But if they don't, and, you know, they're not able to line up somebody else in free agency, you're looking at a 2021 backstop of Andrew Knapp and Rafael Marchand, who became a favorite of Joe Girardi's, it seemed, in the first spring training back in February. He raved about his ability to block balls behind the plate, and he had a really fun, cool home run when he did join the big league team. Didn't hit a home run. Was it 800 at bats or something like that? Never hit a home run, and then he went yard in with the Phillies. So it was a very cool moment. But I mean, is he a long-term starter at the catcher position? Maybe not right away, but does he have the potential to start in the big leagues behind the plate?
I think he does, especially because there are plenty of catchers who are not, you know, offensive powerhouses, and he doesn't strike out. He's a contact guy for sure. And from all, you know, accounts, his defense is just awesome. So obviously it's a position where you can sort of find a role and find a home in the league if you're getting the job done behind the plate. And he's young, so he's still going to get better. I don't know if I'm the Phillies and I'm really trying to finally get back to the playoffs, I'm not sure if an Andrew Knapp, Rafael Marchand is the answer in 2021, okay. Like right immediately. Knapp was great last year. Really stepped up, especially when Realmuto had to sit out. If I had to guess, Realmuto does indeed sign somewhere else. Hopefully, you know, he sticks around. But I would still say they'll probably go after another veteran that's a little bit cheaper, a little more affordable, on a short deal. But they're really excited about Marchand. I just don't think in a perfect circumstance that he's playing you know, 80 games next season. But they like Marshawn. They really like Logan Ohapi too, who, who, you know, I think went up to the alternate site and was a catcher there. If you remember that, that preseason exhibition that they played at Yankee Stadium, he almost, I think he almost hit a home run, and he grew up as a big, big Yankees fan. So they like some of the guys that they have coming up. I just don't see them being ready, you know, when we hit the field in April, hopefully.
Couple other guys I just wanted to throw at you real quick here. Luis Garcia was a guy who won the Gulf Coast League batting title 2 years ago. And then the Phillies have been criticized for this, pushing some guys a little bit in the low minors, maybe pushing them ahead a little bit. And I think it was Garcia was not quite ready to go to the South Atlantic League in 2019. And so his offense really took a hit, but it sounds like evaluators are still pretty high on this guy. Where is Luis Garcia here as we enter 2021?
Yeah, that's a, that's another good question. And another guy that I'm really curious about what kind of strides he might've made, you know, when we weren't able to see him. I would think he could probably, you know, start the upcoming year at high A. That's somewhat of a guess, but yeah, I think that even though the Phillies did, you know, get some criticism for sending him to Lakewood, when you look around the league, there are so many of these guys that are just excelling at a really, really young age. You know, the examples that, that sort of pop into my head, and they're obviously like elite talents are, are, you know, Acuna, Juan Soto, guys like this, Wander Franco, who's coming up with the Rays right now. So I usually side with, let's be aggressive and let's push them. And if they struggle, you know, we have time for them to bounce back. So hopefully, you know, Luis Garcia can sort of get back on track and, from what it sounds like at what they've seen out of him recently, at Instructs, he's on his way to doing that.
Last guy, the number one prospect, Spencer Howard. We got a taste of him at the big league level this year. Kind of up and down. Didn't look great. Wasn't able to pitch deep into games. And I think the most the most worrisome thing was the fastball velocity dip as he would go into games. And then he had a shoulder strain towards the end of the season that wasn't as serious as what he had in 2019. But so you've had a couple of seasons here where he had some shoulder issues. And you had in his brief cup of coffee this year a number of starts in which he just wasn't able to go deep and the velocity dropped. Everybody came into the season thinking he was going to really make an impact in the rotation. And Bryce Harper was certainly singing his praises after a summer camp and talking about he should be in the rotation as soon as he's eligible to get called up or as soon as they were done manipulating his service time. So, I mean, as Spencer Howard enters 2021, I think there's a little doubt on my part, although I'm still bullish on him. What are your thoughts and what are the Phillies' thoughts on Spencer Howard's 2020?
You know, I think as he's, you know, moved his way through the minors, he was always dominant when he was healthy. And with this weird season that we had, and, you know, the fact that he wasn't 100% at the beginning, I like to chalk it up to if he's healthy, that he will be what they need him to be. I don't know if he's ever going to be an ace, but right now they need him to be the number four starter, maybe number five, depending on what they do with, you know, maybe a veteran in free agency. And I think he's good enough to be that. So I don't think the Phillies are too worried about him from what I can tell. But yeah, he's been a guy that has really thrived when he's healthy. So hopefully that's what happens. Obviously durability is somewhat of a question mark. I don't know if he's ever topped 100 innings in a year yet.
Not yet.
So that would be my biggest question mark, my biggest flag moving forward is when is he going to, you know, sort of start to show that ability to pitch, you know, deep into triple digit innings in a year. But I think from a pure talent and stuff standpoint, it still has shown at times when he's feeling good.
Yeah, and as we come into 2021, it's hard to rely on him as one of the main five guys in the rotation simply because he's not going to give you 140 or 150 innings this year. They're not going to – I would doubt that they're going to push him with that much of an innings jump. I mean, maybe they would, but they might have some creative ways to try and keep him in the rotation the whole season. But what they do with Spencer Howard this year will be very, very interesting, I think. Well, folks, listen, make sure you check out Joe Bloss's piece for MILB.com, State of the Phillies. Just hop on his Twitter feed, JT Bloss, and you can find it right there and everything else he's doing. Joe, thanks for coming on Hitting Season, man. I appreciate it.
You got it, John. Thanks for having me.
Well, up next, we're going to dovetail on this and give you Baseball America's top 10 Phillies prospects. They released their prospect list for the Phillies this past week. Robinson Cano gets suspended for PEDs. Say it isn't so. The 2021 Hall of Fame ballot is released. And your phone calls. Thank you all for calling the Hitting Season hotline. You left some messages answering the question, when will Andy McPhail be fired or moved out of his position? Will it happen and when? We got some good responses from that, so we'll play those also coming up next after the break here on Hitting Season. Well, it's officially prospect season, everybody. Baseball America has put out its list of the Phillies' top 10 prospects this week, and the names, most of you will know who these folks are. Some of them you might not be quite as familiar with. Of course, the number one prospect remains Spencer Howard. He didn't get enough time at the big league level in 2020 to be taken off prospect lists, and so Spencer Howard, despite having what appeared to be a little bit of an uneven and even, say, down 2020 season, certainly remains a top prospect and certainly the Phillies' top prospect, so no surprise that he's at the top of the list. Last year's first-round draft pick, pitcher Mick Abel is number two on their prospect list, with Bryson Stott at number three, Francisco Morales at number four, catcher Rafael Marchand at number five, Luis Garcia at number six, Yasuar Garcia at number seven, Simon Uziati at eight, Johan Rojas at nine, and Nick Maton comes in at number 10. Again, Baseball America talked a little bit about Rojas, and The Good Fight's Ethan Witte wrote up a piece about Baseball America's top 10 prospect list, so make sure you check that out. I think one thing the Phillies really lack are good outfield prospects. Their write-up of Johan Rojas is pretty encouraging. He says he's an athletic, toolsy outfielder with impressive bat speed, needs to work on his pitch selection, especially against fastballs, average hit tool with a short, compact swing, but the ball jumps off his bat, exit velocity is of over 110 miles an hour back in 2019. He's working to get more lift on the ball and cut down his high ground ball rate, so a little bit of a Michael Franco thing there, it sounds like. With his added strength, Rojas projects for average power and has shown the ability to hit the ball to all fields in the minor leagues. The Phillies believe he can play all three outfield spots with above average defensive ability and average arm, plus speed and high energy approach. So, listen, you want a guy who can hit hard, and so this is a guy who can hit hard. I think that this, however, is not exactly a top 10 prospect list that is loaded with no doubt about it. There's a lot of dreaming on some of these guys, and so this will be important, as we were talking about with Joe just a second ago, to hopefully have a minor league season and see some of these guys develop. Interesting news coming out of New York. Robinson Cano suspended for performance-enhancing drugs. This is the second time in his career that he's been suspended for PEDs, so you can kiss his Hall of Fame candidacy goodbye. He'll serve a 162-game suspension after testing positive for stenazolol, which is an old-school performance-enhancing drug. I'm sure I'm not saying that name correctly. He served an 80-game suspension in 2018 when he tested positive for furosemide while with the Mariners, which was a diuretic, better known as Lasix, often used to mask banned substances in urine tests. It's unbelievable that he did this a second time. It's an unfathomably destructive and horrible thing to do. Again, he's not getting into the Hall of Fame now. What does this do to the Mets' pursuit of other free agents? I think that's what's interesting here. Do they maybe shift their focus from JT Realmuto to DJ LeMahieu? Do they go after both guys because they know they need to make sure that they are able to replace the offense and improve the offense from last year? They will not be on the hook for Cano's contract in 2021, but the Mets will still have to pay him $48 million in 2022 and 2023, with the Mets responsible for about $40 million of that total. Seattle picks up the other $8 million. So pretty amazing that Robinson Cano would be that stupid and disrespect the game to that degree that he would risk and basically ruin his Hall of Fame chances by testing positive for a steroid at this stage of his career. Just doesn't make any sense at all. The 2021 Hall of Fame ballot has been released. There are a number of Phillies on this ballot. Of course, Curt Schilling is at the top of the ballot. Of everyone on this ballot, he's the most likely to receive induction this year in his ninth year on the ballot. He has this year or next year to get in. Last year, he got 70% of the vote and is trending towards earning entry. Will the Baseball Writers Association of America decide that his play on the field alone is worth it, or will his incendiary off-field comments and actions play into their decision-making? It was mentioned in a piece by Stark in The Athletic that voters may not have much of a problem putting no one in the Hall of Fame this year, simply because last year's inductees will be inducted this summer. COVID prevented the induction ceremony last year, so it's not like they have to have an induction ceremony this year and they have to get somebody to put in there. They could just punt this year if they don't think anybody is worth it, and there will still be a celebration this year. So it's not, sometimes the writers, I think, feel like they have to put somebody in every year. They're not under that pressure this year, and so it's a matter of, are there enough baseball writers who are willing to put Schilling's stuff aside and just look at his on-field exploits and elect him to the Hall of Fame? It's been trending in that direction. We'll see if he's able to get that last 5% and get into the Hall of Fame. Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds return as the only other two players who got more than 60% of the votes last year, with Clemens at 61% and Bonds at 60.7. Both are in their second to last year of eligibility. They have a long way to go in order to get in. I think it's more likely than not those guys don't ever get into the Hall of Fame. Former Philly Scott Rolen is in his fourth year on the ballot, and he has been making steady progress. He got 35% of the ballots last year and should see that number rise. He's still borderline for me still, but I wouldn't hate it if he got into the Hall of Fame. I think he's a Hall of really, really good. He just, at any point in his career, just never felt like I was watching a Hall of Famer, although his defense was incredible, and he was a very solid offensive player for much of his career. Maybe it's because he spent so much of his career outside of Philadelphia, even though he started with the Phillies and had some disappointing seasons from time to time. But I love Scott Rolen. I think he'd be a worthy selection, but I don't know that he's a lock, but he's certainly trending in the right direction. Reliever Billy Wagner probably does deserve to get into the Hall someday. And I know Phillies fans can't stand Billy Wagner. I totally get it. Billy Wagner is not a pleasant guy, and not a guy that we liked rooting for. He's in his sixth year of eligibility this year, was named on 31.7% of the ballots last year, which was a very solid uptick for him as well. He's trending in the right direction. Former Philly Bobby Abreu should see some forward movement too this year. He just barely hung on the ballot last year, named on 5.5% of the ballots. You need that 5% to stay on. But it was just his first year. He's still got 9 more years to try and chip away and get the remaining 70%. It'll be interesting to see how much he's able to do this year. I wouldn't be surprised to see him move up into the 10 to 15% range in his second year. That would be some good momentum for him. None of the first-timers on the ballot, I think, have a shot of getting in right away. Tim Hudson, Mark Burley, Torrey Hunter, probably the best of the new batch, but I think it's going to take a while for any of them to get in, if at all. Shane Victorino is on the ballot. I'd love to at least see him get the 5% he needs and hang around for another year, but I think about a guy like Kenny Lofton, who couldn't hang on after the first ballot. If Kenny Lofton couldn't do it, Shane Victorino probably shouldn't hang on for more than just 1 year, but it would be fun to see Shane Victorino get enough votes to stick around for another season. And former Philly A.J. Burnett, also on the ballot. He will not reach 5% for sure. All right. We have the Hit and Season hotline, folks, and I asked you last week to call in and leave your thoughts as to whether Andy McPhail would be replaced, and if so, when. Obviously, things have been moving very quickly in that direction since we posed the question last week, but wanted to get your thoughts and wanted to hear from you on the Hit and Season hotline. Again, the Hit and Season hotline is 610-628-2115, so make sure, I'm going to give you another question here in just a second that you can call in and respond to, and we'll play them again next week here on the podcast. But here's what you all had to say on the Hit and Season hotline for this week.
Hi, Hitting Season. This is Matt from Philadelphia. I just want to say, in regards to Andy McPhail staying with the team this season, I think he is, because he has one more year on his contract. I think the fact that he's being involved with all the trade decisions and all of the other decisions that are being put in place with the pitching coach and the general manager and looking for that sort of leans more towards him staying for at least one more season and expiring his contract and then going out and finding a new person next year.
Hey guys, my name is Tom Snow and I'm calling from Philadelphia, and I just want to share one of my quick thoughts about how John Middleton is going about this offseason. I really think John Middleton and Matt Klentak thought that they could win in 2019 and 2020, and to be honest, I don't think they were ever really considering signing Real Muto to an extension. I think they really thought they were going to win in one of those 2 years and just kind of let somebody else pay him. So I think that's one of the reasons why Real Muto has not signed an extension. That being said, because that they did not reach the playoffs those 2 years, I really think John Middleton's going to be motivated to try to sign him to a 5-year deal. Hope I'm right.
Hi, John. This is Bob Hausman calling from Carlisle, PA. And I think that McPhail will be replaced as the president of baseball operations. And I think it will probably happen 2 or 3 days after the Mets sign JTR. Thanks.
Well, thanks for those calls on Andy McPhail. And one of the other things we want to do is if you have any general questions you'd like to throw our way, the Hit and Season hotline is open for that as well. 610-628-2115. And we had a couple of those this week as well. So we'll fire that up too.
Hey, John. My name is Steve Beitzel. I live in Charlotte, North Carolina. Grew up in Harrisburg. Moved down here several years ago, but I still follow the Phillies very closely. And wanted to get your thoughts on a possible Phillies trade. I like Kevin Kiermaier in Tampa Bay for center field, and their shortstop, I think his name is Adames, and maybe even Blake Snell. They have a lot of shortstops in their farm system. Once these guys get into some higher pay, Tampa Bay typically trades them away, and I just wanted to gauge your thoughts on taking on some payroll. Now, obviously, we'd have to trade some pieces away. They probably wouldn't ask for Bryson Stott if they have a stacked farm system with shortstops and second basemen. So maybe you could get out of this for Kingery, Velasquez, and, you know, maybe 3 lower-level prospects. Maybe Rafael Marchand. I don't know. Just wanted to let you know. Get your thoughts. Thanks.
Hey, Steve, thanks for that call. I like where your head's at trying to think of some creative trades, because I think that is one way the Phillies are going to be able to improve themselves this offseason. They're going to have to get creative with trades. And I like Kiermaier, I like Willy Adames, and I like Blake Snell. I like all 3 of those guys, but I don't think there's any way you land a package of all those guys. Maybe you can target one of those guys to go after, because you're right, Tampa does not like to pay their stars once they start to become good. So it wouldn't be surprising if they look to move on, especially from a guy like Blake Snell at some point, but I don't think that's happening right away. I think those guys are really key. I mean, you could see them move Kiermaier. I mean, Kiermaier would be an immediate upgrade in center field. I don't think the guys you mentioned would be enough. Scott Kingery has no value right now. In 2 out of his 3 seasons, and again, the 2020 season could have been drastically affected by any damage that COVID may have done to him over the course of the summer. Vince Velasquez doesn't have any value, and as we've been talking about, the Phillies minor league system is a little bit low. I think you're right, Bryson Stott might not have the appeal for them that he might for other teams, seeing as how Tampa does have a lot of shortstops in their system. I think you'd be looking at trading away a guy like Mick Abel. I think you'd be looking, you might have to trade a guy like Spencer Howard to get any combination of those guys if you wanted more than one of them. So it's not out of the realm of possibility. Maybe you can get away with Franklin Morales, but he's not leading the package, and they really don't have any young players at the major league level that Tampa would want at this point. Reese Hoskins, I think, is a guy who could potentially interest them, but you know, I don't think that would be enough to entice Tampa. But you know, I don't know, that's an interesting trade partner. Tampa usually doesn't take on another team's garbage, and unfortunately, Scott Kingery and Vince Velasquez, they're not garbage, but they're not productive players, and they're not guys who have shown that they're going to be long-term solutions for anyone. And usually when Tampa pulls the trigger on that, it's so that they can get cheap long-term answers at certain positions, and Kingery and Velasquez have not shown that they're viable as long-term solutions anywhere. I'm not saying there's not a deal to be made there, but there certainly is a possibility that something could be done. Just doesn't seem like a great fit right now. And that's the problem with any trade possibilities with the Phillies. What is a great trade fit? And given the state of their farm system, it's just a little hard to see right now. But that's a very good question.
My name is Donnie. I'm from Birmingham, Alabama, unfortunately in Braves country. My question is, with the uncertainty of the Phillies' future, what are the odds that Bryce Harper does not make it with the Philadelphia Phillies throughout his entire contract? Is there any scenario at which he gets traded now, later, or at the end of his contract? Love the show. It's hard to find Phillies stuff. Been listening for a long time. Thank you, guys.
Hey, Donnie, thanks for that call, and thanks for checking in way down in Brave, from way down in Braves country, man. God bless you for trying to be a Phillies fan down there. It can't be easy having to live in a world where you're surrounded by a truly great baseball team, and the baseball team you love is struggling. But anyway, to answer your question about Bryce Harper, he's got a huge contract, and I don't think there's any danger of losing him at this point in terms of a trade. He's got a full no trade clause, and I don't see him looking to waive that at any point. He's got, 11 more years left on his contract. That is a monster of a contract to move. I just don't see it happening. Not to mention the fact that Bryce Harper's been pretty good in a Phillies uniform. I think he's been really solid. He hasn't been the iconic superstar, I think, in terms of his production on the field. He had a really good 2020 season, but it was up and down a little bit, and it comes off a 2019 season that was a little more down than up, but I think Bryce Harper is still a really good baseball player. I don't know that he is performing quite at the level of his contract, at least if you're another team looking to take that on. But I think as the contract starts to wane, if he remains productive in his later years, you could probably see something like that. I think it's possible. But the idea when he signed his long-term contract is that he was going to be here for the entirety of it. And I don't think that that's changed, even if there is some frustration on his part with the front office and with the JT Realmuto situation. My main concern is you know, Bryce Harper not exactly doing as much as he has been, as he has done to really promote the Phil's brand and be out there. And he obviously loves the fan base of Philadelphia, but you don't want any of this stuff to negatively color his feelings about the team, and you can't help to think that maybe it has a little bit. But at the moment, I would say it's premature to think about Bryce Harper being dealt somewhere, because I don't see that happening. But it's a good question, and thank you so much for calling in, Donnie. And thank you to all you guys who responded and took the time to call in and leave a message. And here is this week's question. Do you think Theo Epstein will be this team's next president of baseball operations? And if not, who do you want to see running the Phillies? Again, give me your answer. Call 610-628-2115. Leave a message at the Hit and Season hotline. Do you think Theo Epstein will be this team's next president of baseball operations? And if not, who do you want to see take over for Andy McPhail? 610-628-2115 is the Hit and Season hotline. The best responses we will play back on the Hit and Season podcast next week. All right, let's get to our stat of the week. I don't know if you guys saw this or not, but former Philly Drew Smyly got a one-year, $11 million deal to pitch for the Atlanta Braves this year. That is a rich contract for a guy who, when he was here, was not particularly good. I was going to be content to just leave that contract offer, the statistic, because it's incredible that he got a one-year, $11 million deal. But look at Drew Smyly's other statistics, and these are our stats of the week. His average fastball velocity was 93.8 miles an hour last year, which was easily the best of his career. He gained 2.5 miles an hour on his fastball. He had a swing and miss percentage of 15%, the best of his career, a ground ball to fly ball ratio of 1.19, which was the best of his career, and a fielding independent pitching of 2.01, which was the best of his career, and his spin rate was much higher this year, too. He gained just under 200 RPMs on his fastball, which was the most of any starting pitcher from 2019 to 2020. Somehow, the Phillies were a year late on Drew Smyly, too. I don't know what he did this past year. The Phillies missed out when they traded for him midseason in 2018. They got a guy who was not as good as he was last year, and the Atlanta Braves are going to plug him into the middle of their rotation and hope that all of those peripheral metrics continue into 2021. Pardon me, I said they traded for him in the 2018 season. I meant the 2019 season, the Phillies did. In 2021, the Braves are hoping that all of those peripheral stats will hold true in 2021. If they do, the Braves will have gotten a really good pitcher for not a whole lot of money. All right, folks, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. Thanks once again to Joe Bloss for coming on the podcast and sharing his thoughts on the Phillies farm system. Again, call the Hittin' Season hotline at 610-628-2115. Don't forget to leave a 5-star rating at the Good Fight podcast feed on Apple Podcasts. Please tell your friends about the podcast. We've got lots of Phillies and baseball news to talk about this offseason, so if you've got Phillies fan friends and they don't know about this podcast, point them our direction. You can get us on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcast, wherever it is you get your podcasts. And don't forget to check out the Hittin' Season Patreon as well. Find all the bonus content we have there by going to patreon.com/hittinseason. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time here on Hittin' Season.